Yeah, I'm like Neo now.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
That's Morpheus.
Good evening, everyone. Jurassic Views, Zaya Quiena, Bryce Diamond, Black History Month 2022. It's Tuesday night. Thank goodness Bourbon Street is behind us. Whatever happened in New Orleans stays in New Orleans. We will not repeat it again. It is flushed in some seedy joint in the French Quarter. For now, we will focus on a classier episode, a classier human being than what we displayed on the floor in New Orleans. Tonight, Zaya, we are going to talk about Don Staley. Don Staley, how are you feeling about that, man?
As early as I had a comprehension of the world of basketball, Don Staley was a part of that world. Right. We talked endlessly about our appreciation of the women's game and especially that period in the mid-90s. And Don Staley was a staple. And it was actually a great kind of not just reconnaissance, but kind of a walk down memory lane to go back to her upbringing, because you can actually connect the dots as to where she grew up, where she played, where she coached, and where she's at right now. So,
indeed. Well, let's get into this and see where Don Staley's story takes us. Before there was Kyle Lowry, North Philly's finest was Don Staley. Don Staley was an incredible high school ball player, ended up going to the University of Virginia before she competed for her team in the Olympics, her country, in 1996. Massive kind of breakout for the women's game, many would say. Mm-hmm. Some would say that the 96 Olympic team, that women's team, was the dream team that year. Sorry, Hakeem Olajuwon. And many would say that 96 team was really what tipped the scales for the birth of the WNBA. Don Staley would win the gold in 96. And then later in 2004, the 100th year of the Olympic Games held in Athens, Greece, was the flag bearer as a gold medal in that Olympics as well. And as she points out, highlights in her Hall of Fame speech, was blown away that a woman from North Philly was leading all these world-class athletes of all sports mm-hmm. from the United States. What's interesting is I didn't have much of a touch point. I didn't have much of a connection to the women's game as I was growing up. I'm not going to call out any names for why that was, but I really was disconnected from the game and didn't really know Don Staley, the player, but was introduced to her as a coach. She started at Temple University after an incredible WNBA career. Played a lot of those years in Charlotte for the Sting. And then after, you know, I would say a mediocre kind of coaching stint. Not that she was a bad coach, but she was didn't have always the greatest teams necessarily in Temple. She got a big promotion, some would say, got her chance to coach at South Carolina. Now, I think she made the program before the program was really made. And she was able to create belief in that program, not only take them to the Final Four, but in 2017, she won the championship with the Gamecocks of South Carolina. And currently, as she still coaches in South Carolina, her team is a top five team, and I think many would say they are a favorite to win it all this year. She is a recipient of the Naismith Award for the best player in NCAA history, but she also won the Naismith Award for the best coach for Coach of the Year Award. So as a player, wins best player, as, you know, in the NCAA, and then wins as the best coach. She is the first person to do that in, I think, the women's or the men's game, which is pretty impressive. And then comes full circle with her Olympic story in the 2020 Olympics, although they happened in 2021. She wins a gold medal as the head coach of Team USA. Pretty impressive stuff. Something you might not know about Dawn Staley, Zaya, unless you did some thorough research, is that she has a dog named Champ who has their own Twitter account. So if you're interested in following Dawn Staley's dog, follow Champ on Twitter. This is an incredible woman. Not only does she have the physique of a WWE superstar, and could probably shoulder press me with one hand. This is a woman who inspires young women to be their best selves, not just on the court, but in academics as well, and has her own foundation called the Dawn Staley Foundation. She is a Hall of Famer. She is someone for kids to look up to. And I think in a lot of ways, as two guys who want to get back into the coaching ranks, I think someone that we could look up to as well as a coach.
Interesting. Well said. Well said. Let me start off by also saying this. Dawn Staley is one that has negotiated the most historic contract for a black coach with South Carolina University by signing a $22.5 million contract, $22.4 million contract for 7 years. So regardless of her track record, Bryce, because we could always say, well, she's earned it, but we know very well that there are many in her line of work, black women who have done the work, who have had the achievement, and yet they weren't always compensated. And many of them haven't even been given these opportunities. And so for her to be the face of this kind of emerging new wave of coaches, she's, you know, I would also consider her younger. I know she's 51 years old, but she's still relatively young as it relates to many peers in the coaching ranks. It's quite remarkable, right? And, you know, she did lead her team to the NCAA Final Four last year and ranked number one to start this year. So it's interesting. I mean, she's big school in the SEC, bigger platform, most likely bigger budget, so she can recruit some of the biggest stars in the country in terms of amateur athletes. I will say this, Raven, one of her players, played with the McDonald's All-American men's team. That's how good of a player that is currently on that South Carolina team. So, so I think that's something to be said about her leadership, and I'm glad that she's actually in the NCAA, because what she will then do is really impact these young women who are going to then become some of the more recognizable faces in the sport, and making sure that that imprint happens at a, at that younger age. Shoot, I wish she was my coach, or my mentor, goodness gracious. But a few things that you even mentioned, Bryce, you know, like she's from Philly. Like I didn't know she was from Philly until I did the deep dive, but it made so much sense in terms of how she played the game, how she had her sights to become great. She uses, and the way in which she talks about the game is quite interesting as well. Reminds me a lot of Kyle Lowry when Kyle Lowry does choose to speak. She said, "I never cheated the game. I always honored it." And she said, "That's why I was compensated." And she shared that in not in the Hall of Fame speech, the enshrinement speech, but in an interview with All the Smoke.
Oh yeah,
with Matt Barnes and Captain Jack, and I felt she was a bit loose there, so I think she could, you know, go back in memory. And she talked about, hey, I went through my bruises. I didn't go to prep schools. I went to a public school that, unfortunately, oftentimes isn't the most resourced as it relates to not just sports, but women's sports in particular. And played with many of her male peers, right? And so, so you can now, when you see her play, there's a level of grit that stylistically, there's this kind of Philly basketball is always known for a particular type of, you know, basketball ethic. Thank you, Alvin Williams, constantly reminds us of that. And I could see it in her play now. Being exposed to her in terms was only either in the Olympics, so starting in 96 first, and then when she joined the Charlotte Sting in the late 90s, she was part of the ABL in the 90s, which then folded and merged with the WNBA, and then finally with the Charlotte Sting. And the only reason why I know her is not because I was this flag waving women's sports enthusiast. It was because Slam Magazine actually did not the best job of highlighting women athletes or women basketball players, but giving credit where credit was due. And so in terms of consuming what was part of the culture, one of her name came up. And it was interesting because she was also part of the kind of cultural capital of basketball. Even back in the 90s, she did a commercial with for Nike that was directed by Spike Lee. Lisa Leslie was a part of that commercial. And yet she was one of the more younger members of that cohort. And I was like, interested. I was like, who is this woman? And we didn't have YouTube back then either. So the way in which you have to find highlights is actually you either watch the games, or when WNBA got a spot in on television, you would watch, you'd consume it from there, or see the highlights. And you're piecing it together, and you could see that she's a PG through and through. I don't want to overstate this, but there's a lot of, you know, I would say Kyle Lowry in her, but what I should say, there's a lot of her in Kyle Lowry. There's the way in which she breeds leadership, the way in which she's magnetic when she's on the court as a point guard. Doesn't even have to have the ball, but she can do wizardry on the court to ensure players in the right place. The ball gets to the right person on the court. And then defensively, Bryce, you mentioned that she was Naismith Player of the Year. She was back-to-back Player of the Year, 91 and 92. So that means that she was literally this out-of-worldly leader in women's NCAA basketball for 2 years straight. And that has to mean that she's functioning at a very cerebral level, even at that young age. She's operating at a cerebral level higher than her competition. And now that she's coaching, goodness gracious, she's going to pass that on to a young generation of women athletes who are going to take over the sport in ways that I'm excited to see, because the game is evolving. But something that I think she will provide is the way in which she sees the game. I'll end there for the moment. Yeah, I know, yeah. I went on my Stephen A, but I had to.
Well, believe me, I won't JJ Redick you right now. this is about Dawn Staley, so we're not going to do that. But this is someone who, in their Hall of Fame speech, had the opportunity to highlight, and I think this is a North Philly thing. At least we see this through Kyle Lowry, so we'll call it a North Philly thing for now until we're proved otherwise.
I know where you're going with this. Go ahead.
But in her Hall of Fame speech, did not talk about herself very much. And if she talked about anything, it was her experiences that she had that were heavily influenced by positive role models in her life. She talked about her mother a lot. She highlighted, teammates that were important. She highlighted coaches in her life that were important. Talked about her high school coach quite a bit in that Hall of Fame speech. But another thing she did, and it reminded me, and I know I'm biased on this, but it reminded me a lot of David Robinson's speech. I don't know if you remember David Robinson's speech.
Of course I do. Made me cry.
I thought I was one of his kids.
I thought he was talking to me. He's like,
but he talked to his kids in that speech. And Dawn Staley, in her speech, Hall of Fame speech, again, talking about her career, had the chance to focus on all her accolades and achievements, said, no, I'm going to send a motivational message to the women that I'm going to coach at South Carolina. I think she had just finished her first year there. And she took the chance to say, if you keep belief, if you walk with me in this, if we push together, we can win a national title. And what happens? But 4 years later, they win a national title. It's leadership, it's work ethic, as you've said, it's ambition, it's a humility to not just talk about yourself, but those who you want to make better or who have made you better. She is top class, man, and she, there's a lot of, you know, again, I'm going to call it North Philly, a North Philly thing that's with inside of her. She also spoke highly of her mother, which we know Kyle Lowry does. And articles have been written. Thank you, Katie Hendel, about Kyle Lowry's mother. And I'm sure there's articles written about Dawn Staley's mother as well. What's interesting about Dawn Staley that's a little different from other, not just players, but coaches of her caliber. This is a woman that has basically made family to be her teammates and her coaching staff and those she coaches. She's not married. She doesn't have kids of her own, as far as I could find in my readings. And that's interesting. You don't even see that much in the men's side of things. So it was interesting for me to watch someone who's at the height of their game, at the height of their career, in a very kind of family-based kind of culture, I would say, in basketball.
That she has created, that she has created herself.
Yeah, what did you make? You're right. Anything you make of that? I mean, this is not a criticism
Absolutely. Let's go back to her career when she's playing in the 2000s. She's with the Charlotte Stings, and she gets hired to coach at Temple. So the WNBA season, if you remember, is during the summer.
Yes.
And so what does she do rather than play overseas in the fall and winter, like many of her peers, contemporaries, she decides to coach. She was actually hesitant to coach. She shared in an interview that I think it was in All the Smoke that she refused three times.
Oh, wow.
And then finally accepted. And so she breathes this something about the game, which is not just playing the game, right? She wants to be around it. I think there's the community aspect that she gives herself to. But she's also appreciative of it because she would credit the basketball community for forming who she is today, right? Not going off, you know, the edge here in existentialism, but she wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for individuals who invested in her. Yes, her parents raised her as a young girl, but she was saying becoming a woman, becoming the person that she is today, the leader, that was the basketball community. And so I think it comes natural for her now as a coach to recreate that type of community that is unabandoningly invested in an individual, not just the player, but as an individual. And she would actually mention that. She mentioned when she was at Temple, they were relatively successful, right? Like, you know,
within the Atlantic 10,
just above, you know, and they were competitive. Mm-hmm. But she said she knew then that she was more invested in her players than she was in winning. And some coaches would say that and they're lying. I know that for sure because it's through their recruitment process. It's how they treat their players, right? A range of them. But I think there was something true and honest about that for her. Bryce, you remember when there was the hiring of, there was, you know, the, in the discourse in the NBA, there was discussions on who will be the first woman coach. And Becky Hammon came up as a name because she was coaching with the San Antonio Spurs. She was one of the lead assistant coaches there. But one name that I kept on mentioning, maybe just to you, I never mentioned it on the pod, was Dawn Staley, because I felt that she had an element of respect in the game, bar none, like women and men, one, various stages. And I also think there's a huge cultural element that we can't forego, right? And when she talks about Philly, she talks about the projects. She talks about the disenfranchised communities she was raised in that was significantly part of her narrative. And so she understands that there has to be an element that seeks to invest in the whole person beyond just what is on the court or their association identity with the game. And dear Lord, the NBA, these young men who are coming into the league need that type of, not just coaching, they need that type of a leadership. That's why I mentioned her name. I didn't even know all of the other accomplishments and successes that she's had. But if there is someone that I think can impose themselves to the game in that way, it would be Dawn Staley. And it's not because of her fiery personality, right? It's It has less to do with that. It has more to do with, I think there's an integrity aspect. And I say all of that not to dismiss Hammond, not at all, and, or to rank them, and no, not at all. But if there were names, and rather than just put so much pressure on Hammond herself, if there were names and candidates that we should consider, because I think the NBA should definitely do so. And I wouldn't be surprised if many teams have already prospective names, but that she would be on the list. Now, what team would have to bid for her to get her out of South Carolina? You have to be a well-oiled organization, right, to even pull that off, because she has standards for herself.
Well, I'll tell you right now that
I'm just going to put it out there. There's some teams there that are sketchy as heck from top right. to bottom. We're talking right. ownership to senior management, and you know, and so hey, you're not going to get Don Staley to come out and try to save y'all. Right. But anyway.
Well, I mean, when I think about the fact that, you know, sometime this spring when the NBA is in the playoffs and Doc Rivers blows another 3-1 lead in the series, I'm sure the Philadelphia 76ers will think about Don Staley taking their team to the promised land for the first time since
quick,
Julius
quick, Erving. Quick side note. There's an interview, press conference actually, of James Harden. And God bless his heart, man. This dude had the audacity to say, you know what? Not only does this team have a winning culture, they have the most dominant big man in the league, which I agree. Him and Jokic are beyond just MVP level candidates. But they said we have a winning coach in Doc Rivers. Well, that's enough for me. I'm like, oh my gosh, maybe he's stuck in 2008, right?
Yeah.
When he won in Boston, and he didn't really follow what happened afterwards. But anyway, that's a side note and a quick shot at Doc.
But he's
man enough to take it.
Yeah, they're losing by 40 right now.
but Don Staley, there's a story. You know, she's not just this meek coach on the sidelines either. She's got a fiery side, just like when she was playing. There's a story when there's a close game that they lose in Temple, home. You know, and she is so irate. This is why I love this woman. She goes and chases after the refs, who quickly try to exit the court. She runs after them.
Yep.
Going through the hallway, she finds out that Coach Chaney is already after and berating the refs.
Yeah.
And has to be held back. So she kind of steps back and kind of gains composure because someone else has essentially unleashed on them. And she's like, okay, I don't have to, because she said, I had to go to bat for my players because they were giving the short end of the stick.
Yeah.
Right. And that was a moment for her, at least, that kind of confirmed, this is, I'm a coach that's going to be thinking in ways that transcend, not just the final outcome, though she's very competitive, but I believe in my players and I will go to bat for them. So she was going after the refs, not because they made a few calls and she just lost the game, but because they were cheating her players. Mm-hmm. And that's the type of coach I'm talking about, right? Mm-hmm. That's the type of coach. And that's the type of environment that at least at the, that's part of our origin story as a coach, because she also had access to Coach Chaney, you know, RIP, in terms of his methodical approach to coaching, his calculated way of moving chess pieces on the court, but also the way in which he related to his players. Coach Chaney, like we mentioned last year on the pod, also went to bat for his players, right? That was a hallmark of his coaching style, just like Coach Thompson, RIP. So so to me, that's enough. So the success that she's having here in South Carolina is almost is evidence because of her journey, right? And where she's come from.
Now, it's interesting talking about, you had mentioned her salary this season. This season, she is making $2.9 million to coach South Carolina, the highest paid women's NCAA coach in the history of the game. Interestingly enough, the highest paid WNBA coach, whether a woman or a man at that level, is Becky Hammon, who's making $1 million. Any thoughts around?
Of course, I have thoughts.
Yeah, around how the NCAA, and this is not to take anything away from Dawn Staley. I think she deserves every penny she gets. I could care less about what Coach K makes or what Coach Pitino makes or any of those other cats. But how is it that the NCAA, the women's game, is paying more to Dawn Staley, more to one of their coaches, than a WNBA coach is getting?
Yeah, we underestimate the revenue scheme of the NCAA. It's it's one of the highest, not just paying, but in terms of payouts, in terms of revenue, sports in the world. And because she goes to a school, it's the Southeastern Conference is a big football country, as you would know. They have immense sports programs, both men as well as women, and and because of that, it allows for a compensation package that is a lot higher than even some pro teams in the women's game. Bryce, it wouldn't be a surprise to you, but there are some NCAA teams in the men's side that there's coaches like, you know, Coach K or Coach Calipari, who make more money than some NBA coaches, right? Yeah. Like, it's just how the way in which colleges want to keep their brands, right, the coaches, and continue the continuity, to maintain the continuity of recruits coming in, which is huge in terms of maintain, you know, the brand of the school, or the reputation of the school. So it's not a surprise there. I think again, the NCAA has made small steps into ensuring that amateur athletes are being compensated, and getting a piece of the pie of the huge revenue stash that's generated. But I'm glad that, you know, a woman of color like Dawn Staley is also getting that, because 20 years ago it would have been a fantasy, right, to imagine someone of her stature to be compensated, and then one, and then two, also be not just the attention that she's getting, but also to go to bat for the players in the same way, in the same light, in order for them to get compensated accordingly.
Now, it's interesting, you know, when I've got into discussions with male peers of mine who love sports and want to talk about finances within the game, oftentimes they say to me, well, you know, the women's game shouldn't get the same compensation because the game's not as good, and blah, blah, blah. What's interesting to me is there are things like salary caps that exist to try to create, if not parity in the league, which is a term that's often used for the NFL, although recently I heard Masai Ujiri talk about parity in relation to Adam Silver, who he thought there was more parity in the league because of Adam Silver. Another term that's often used is around caps is to have fairness in competition, another phrase that's used. What's interesting to me is all of a sudden that's thrown out the window when we want to talk about the women's game versus the men's game. Now, are the women any less cerebral? Are they any less technical or any less skilled than the men? I think that's very much up for debate. I would say that someone like Dawn Staley is probably just as savvy, just as skilled as her job as a male counterpart.
First of all, this is a hot take. She's definitely better. Given all of the access that he's had, she's better than Doc Rivers. I'll just put it. That's my hot take for tonight.
So if we want to talk about fair competition, if we want to talk about parity-driven salary caps, why is that not instituted in something like the WNBA and NBA, when many, not all, of the franchises in the WNBA are owned by NBA teams? In the NCAA, they've helped create some of that correction where a certain percentage of the money, I don't know if it's dollar for dollar yet, but a high percentage of the money is given to the female sports, the women's sports within the athletic department. There's that standard that has a regulatory system has been created. So if we can do that there, why can't we do that within the WNBA and the NBA? Why are we all of a sudden wanting to get around, kind of dodge and duck away from this competition fairness and parity when we want to talk about the difference between men and women, but we don't do that when we have salary caps? Well, that's all fine. It's funny when America has, and even Canada has, this capitalistic free market type language around economy, but we can't create that same free market when it comes to sports. Anyways, I find it fascinating. Now, I am thankful that Dawn Staley is getting her just desserts. She deserves every penny that she gets paid. Yeah. And so should Becky Hammon, who is the highest paid WNBA coach of all time.
Now, do you want me to critique the free market? Because I have a job and I don't want my employers to listen to this recording. No, you're absolutely right. Let me just give you some numbers here, right? The men's NCAA tournament generated, 2021, generated $917.8 million in revenue. Just the tournament.
A lot of that is from commercial interests, interests. Yeah,
exactly. And the women generated 15.1 in revenue. Yeah.
Well, we know why that is. We know what systems are. Patriarchy is an invasive thing.
Yeah, we know that the women's game is not invested the same way as the men's game is. The setup, what cities are chosen. What corporate sponsorships are tapped on the shoulder, what operational resources are allocated to ensure the success of the women's game. We should be impressed that they even generated that amount of 15.1 in light of the pandemic, right?
Sure.
So, so if we talk about parity, and at least schools in the Southeastern Conference do, is the revenue is then shared amongst the members of the conference. And right. then schools then decide where they're going to invest it. And so
right.
Don Staley, being at a big school, South Carolina, obviously, is able to access that pool of money. Now, if she was in a different conference, Bryce, regardless of how great she was, she probably wouldn't have gained that access. But I, important to mention why she chose South Carolina, which both of us didn't know, is because she had roots in South Carolina.
Yes.
Her parents are originally from South Carolina. They moved and relocated to Philadelphia, city of brotherly love. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that her family was threatened by a white patron. I think he was an owner of a butcher. Don Staley's grandmother really urged her mother to relocate to Philadelphia in order to avoid a lot of the impacts of segregation and violence that occurred amongst African Americans there. So for her, returning to South Carolina meant something beyond just the access to a good program, but it was also very sentimental and true to her roots.
Now, speaking of South Carolina, I recently watched Chef's Table Barbecue Edition. And my friend, if there is a pilgrimage that we need to take as Don Staley disciples, let's go to University of South Carolina in Columbia, but let's make sure that we make our way to Scott's Barbecue, Rodney Scott's Barbecue in Charleston, to get some of the best, if not the best, barbecue in the United States. Just a sidebar, is it possible we could get Miss Staley to have dinner with us there? It's possible. I don't know if she'll do it, but complete tangent there, but I just had to mention that.
Let's put it on the bucket list.
Yeah. Now, we've talked on the show in the past, quite recently. I think it was in the off season when seven black coaches in the NBA were hired by teams. And it raised the number from maybe five or six last year. It's been fluctuating a lot. And it's got up to seven to 12. So it was five last year, and now it's 12. And that's a record for the NBA, 12 African-American or black coaches in the league.
Yeah.
And I listened or watched, I guess, a video of five coaches, including Don Staley, five black women coaches in the college ranks. Mm-hmm. Talk about when it was trendy, when it was a fad to hire women black coaches in the NCAA. And it was a fascinating discussion. And one of the things I was curious if you knew much about was the importance of coaching in the historical black colleges, because that was a conversation that came up there as well. And Dawn chose not to go into that, not because she was against it, but she just chose a different path to go into Philly, to Temple first. Any thoughts around the importance of the historical black colleges as they as it pertains to the women's game in the NCAA?
Just repeat the question again, Press.
Yeah, just the importance. What's what's the importance of the historical black colleges for the women's game, for the women's NCAA game?
Yeah, HBCUs continuously push out incredible, not just student athletes, but student professionals out into the world on the grounds of great faculty and coaches. Now for women, from my understanding, it was still have the challenges in the HBCU ranks, as they mm-hmm. would in the bigger schools and in the non-HBCU schools. And it has a lot to do with budgets and how and the allocation of dollars that go into mm-hmm. the program. And unfortunately, the women's game still is, if you think it's unfunded in in state schools and private schools, then they're even more in the HBCU ranks.
Right.
So it gives a lot of it becomes very challenging for Black women when they want to the options for them to coach. Where do they actually go, right? So if the bigger schools don't give them the opportunities, and the HBCUs don't always have the best resources in order for one to be compensated, right? You don't have a second job or third job to support your coaching career. You know, a lot of women aren't the Dawn Staleys, right? Dawn Staley's, it's unfair to say that she has a unique path, but that's the reality. You know, she an accomplished player since her time in University of Virginia, all the way to the point where she's coaching at the highest level in South Carolina, right? And so that's probably the concern, whereas if the NCAA is unfair, the HBCUs is a reflection of the NCAA to the same degree. Mm-hmm. And they don't have the enough resources. However, there is a pivot where you're seeing even the NBA being a huge promoter of the HBCU program, right? Chris Paul being almost this champion, this advocate. And so there's dollars being funded. I mean, you remember last year in Atlanta, I think there was during the All-Star weekend, teams would then donate to HBCU schools. I think there's also HBCU Champions Weekend that has, you know, portions of the funding comes from the NBA. Now you would hope that that is also being attributed to the women's game as much as it is for the men's game. I don't think it's there yet.
Right.
But again, I think these are the small steps we're trying to do to address the gender inequities. And, you know, and my concern, right, you have a daughter and she's growing to appreciate the game and you're most likely going to coach her down the road, is how many young girls or now women weren't invested in. And so they chose different routes because of the lack of resources or the attention given to them playing sports for a longer period. We're not just talking, you know, you playing on the weekends and it's kind of cute, but you being competitive and being invested in and having the confidence to take this to the next level, whether it be amateur or even professional level. So I still think there's ways to go, but I think there's some corners that we've already turned to get us there.
Yeah, that's good stuff, man. Now, on the note of me coaching my daughter, that will not be happening. You will be coaching her well before I do, because her and I are like oil and water when it comes to certain things. and we will not be going down that road. I think we'll butt heads too much. And she wants to work hard, but probably not for daddy too. You know, I would love to be able to have the access to watch Don Staley coach more. And I would love for her to be able to be highlighted in these conversations of great coaches. Obviously, our focus is the NBA, and so we're often talking about the Spolstras, the Nick Nurses, the Ty Lues of the world. But I think it's time, you know, to have a Don Staley in the forefront, and to be in conversations about coaching. It's great that All the Smoke had Don Staley on. I think that's very important. I think the cash, the compensation that's being given to Don Staley, I think is very important. But I think it's time that television networks, maybe through NCAA channels, maybe somehow else, you know, got had to have more time. There, you know, each network had to have, I don't know if it would be equal right away, quota. But yeah, quota, to have yeah. a quota to highlight, so that there is greater opportunity for not just, as many have taught me, many women have taught me, not just for young girls and young women to see role models in the sport of basketball or athletics, but also for young boys and young men to see that women should be respected as leaders in sport, but we can learn a ton from them as well, because they're innovative, they're highly intelligent, they're competitive, they're ambitious. That, you know, they're not just on the sidelines cheering on their hubbies,
or their mama, or like mothers cheering on their sons. Yeah,
they are in the forefront because they are high level, competitive, high level. You know, well thought out people, competent people at their professions.
Yeah, it's I think we're not there yet. I think we're gonna get there, right? I think there's the right advocates in place. I think there's the corporate dollars I don't believe some of the numbers that people spew out to say the math doesn't work. I don't believe it. You know, let's do new formulas. Let's to make the dollars work. But yeah, I think I'm curious to know, with the necessary resources and the gap being smaller, the impact of the next generation, because that's really what it is, right? Don Staley was a part of a generation that benefited from a previous generation, and Cheryl Miller, who didn't have the platform and the same resources, right? And she's the lone voice of her generation that we know of. There's many more that we don't know. Yeah. And so Don Staley, you know, is the offshoot of that, and we'll see what occurs of this new generation of young women athletes who are standing on the shoulders of a Don Staley.
Absolutely.
But, and not just playing, we're not just talking about playing for the Olympics or playing in the WNBA, but we're talking about, and you know, within the culture, having an impact in the culture. Like, you know, we're talking documentaries, like, you know, Michael Jordan's documentary, you know, The Last Dance. You know, will you know, women athletes be regarded in the same light as legendary athletes. That's when we really get to the same point or equal footing, right? It's not just appreciating them in terms of athletes, players and coaches, but they become these superstars, these mega mythological, you know, heroes. That's when we get there.
Yeah, definitely. And definitely, if you watch the documentary on Dawn Staley, you'll become a better person rather than taking things personal, as Michael Jordan did in his
or making entire things up to fuel your competition and tap yourself on the back for it and have the audacity to still lie that he had nothing to, and he had at his age and stage of life, he had nothing to do with Isaiah Thomas not being part of the dream team.
Wow. Now the NCAA tournament.
I obviously haven't let that go, but can you...
Vince Carter and Michael Jordan's lies. Now, the NCAA tournament is about a month away. The women's tournament as well is about a month away. One of the teams to watch, without a doubt, is Dawn Staley's South Carolina team. On Dawn Staley's South Carolina team, a player to watch, Mississauga's own. I got to rep my city here, my hometown. Letitia Amir. Amir. Give Letitia respect. One of Dawn's stars was part of that team that went to the Final Four last year. Hopefully, they're holding the trophy at the end of the tournament. And on a compensation note, I think it's important that female players, women players, women athletes are well compensated in the weight room. As we learned last year, it should be equal to the men in the NCAA, but also in the pro game, and coaches should be looked at and respected. Hopefully there's some compensation for the podcast, because my guy is not just recording right now, he's also doing dishes.
Yes, yes. I don't want to add anything more to it. It's been a long day and a long week. It's only Tuesday, post Valentine's Day mess. But this is where I am.
Hey, man, that's all right. Dawn Staley, if you have not heard of her before, I'm not sure what you've been paying attention to in the world of basketball.
Goodness gracious.
But do at least a Wikipedia search for her career. She was coaching, as Zaya pointed out, Temple, and taking them to an undefeated divisional title, 19-0 in the Atlantic 10 one year, as well as playing in the WNBA. I can't say that I did anything near that. And most of my, probably all my male peers can't say they accomplished those things at the same time. So do tune in to her games, South Carolina games, and Zaya, let's plan a pilgrimage at some point to see Dawn in action in South Carolina, and also get some of that barbecue in Charleston.
Let's make that happen.
All right, man. Well, I don't know. I can't say at this point to the listeners who will be our next person in this Black History Month 2022 series. That's still yet to be selected, but there's a short list. If you have any people that you think we should highlight, obviously this will not be the last series that we do on Black History Month, but please let us know who you'd like for us to highlight and take a bit of a deep dive on. Until then, we will catch up with you soon. Hopefully things in Minnesota look a whole lot better than they did in New Orleans for the Raptors. And we'll catch up to you after that game.
Peace.